Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard.
Donadoni che riceve il pallone, Edani, parte il traversone di Edani, c'è il colpo di testa vincente stavolta da parte di Van Basten e il Milan sblocca la situazione, gol! L'arresto di Savicevic, il suo lancio perfetto e il tiro vincente ancora di Stojkovic, combinazione implacabile dei due mostri dell'attacco della Stella Rossa. Savicevic e Stojkovic, gol di Stojkovic, 1-1. Batti cuore, Rijkaard. Tira il gol! Il Milan passa, il Milan passa!
Welcome to the Blizzard's Greatest Games podcast. Joining Jonathan Wilson and myself today is James Horncastle of ESPN, BBC, BT Sport, on the continent fame. My goodness, James, you've done it all.
Is there anybody I don't work for?
Well, you're with us now, so you've got
the there's a really
set.
Obvious one so far.
James, it's a pleasure to have you here. We go to the European Cup. In the late 80s, this is the game you've chosen, Milan away to Red Star. Or to use the local name,
Zvezda.
Zvezda. So Red Star, or what Jonathan just said,
Zvezda.
Yeah.
Milan or Milan.
Indeed. We've got it all here, all bases covered. But why have you gone for this game, James?
Well, I think when people think about Sacchi's Milan, they tend to be two games. One right at the end of his first season, when they go to Naples and they take on Maradona's Napoli, the champions, and they beat them 3-2. They overtake them in Serie A, and they get a standing ovation from the crowd at the San Paolo. And the other is later in the European Cup in this season, when they play Real Madrid and they beat them 5-0, which is seen as one of the all-time great performances in that competition. But
so just to be clear, we're talking about 88-89.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And this we're talking specifically about Zvezda 1, Milan 1.
Exactly. And I think this is a game that is often forgotten about. In the second round, Milan, they play the first leg at San Siro and they draw 1-1. And
was that a little bit of a surprise?
It was a surprise, so much so, and Red Star made such an impression on Milan that you had the likes of Marco van Basten coming out afterwards and saying, I think we've messed this up. I think we're out. They were very pessimistic about their ability to go to Belgrade and get a result. But the reason why I've chosen the second leg, or the second leg, as we'll get to, is because I think this is a pivotal moment in the legend of Sacchi, the legend of this great Milan side, which is one of the three club teams to change the course of football history, if you like, with Rinus Michels's Ajax, this Sacchi's Milan side, and Pep's Barcelona, and how close they came to going out at this stage, and the what-if questions. You know, if they go out, what happens? Sacchi, probably within a few weeks, I think, loses his job, doesn't win the first of back-to-back European Cups, and maybe this Milan side does not have the place in posterity that it does now. So I think it's a very pivotal game in the history of one of the all-time great sides.
A sliding doors moment. I mean, I know sport's full of sliding doors moments, technically speaking, but...
No, but this really is, because the set of circumstances is so weird. Mm. You know, this is not just a shot at the post rather than going in, or a weird deflection or something. The fact that a game is abandoned when Milan look like going out. But, I mean, let's talk about the first leg. So it's 0-0 at half-time, and then 2 minutes after half-time, Milan's famous back four is absolutely all over the place. And as a result of this, Stojkovic, Dragan Stojkovic, arguably the greatest Serbian player ever, is able to get the ball, goes past Maldini, goes past Baresi, which, if you're going to beat two people in a row, and hammers his finish into the top corner past Galli.
Mm. It's fair to say he liked a hammered finish.
Yeah.
Stojkovic.
Well, he could place the ball while hitting it really hard and putting curl on it.
Yeah.
Stojkovic has a great tie over all three legs, if we want to put it like that. And I think one of the things that really stands out over the course of this second round is how the relationship between Stojkovic and Savicevic, which Sacchi, in all of his, you know, after dinner speeches and his books, because he keeps publishing them. It's the 30th anniversary, incidentally, this year of this triumph, says, well, you know, with Savicevic and Stojkovic on the pitch, you needed two balls because they were just both so selfish. You know, the kind of tens that I would never have in my team. And unfortunately, I was unlucky enough to have Savicevic in my second spell at Milan, and that's what did me. And instead, you watch the pair of them in these 2.5 games, and the ability to find each other, it's almost like they're often connected by a piece of string. It's great. But to finish the chat on the first leg, I suppose, you have Milan more or less instantly get back into it.
Well, so quickly that the replays of the first goal are still being shown,
yeah,
as you hear a cheer in the background and realise Milan have equalised.
And this is the theme of the tie, I suppose. Goals that no one really saw. But you have Pietro Paolo Viedis, who now runs a wine bar in Milan, Il Gusto di Viedis, if you ever want to go there. And he's always someone who has like kind of a brush of a mustache,
grey hair,
mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of salt and pepper hair, and didn't really fit the kind of striker that Arrigo Sacchi wanted in his team. He was just a goal scorer, really. And yeah, he sort of against all odds in the first couple of years of Sacchi being at Milan was able to be in the team quite regularly and score big goals. Because in the first year, Van Basten is pretty much out injured for the entire season. He only plays three games from start to finish. In the second season, this one, you have Hullit, who is in and out of the team with fitness struggles, niggling injuries and that sort of thing. And Virdis is able to profit, but they get back into the game. It finishes 1-1. And as I say, there was this real kind of sense that we're in for a fight here, because Jonathan and I were talking about this off air a little earlier. You look at the names in this Red Star side, it's not the one that won the European Cup a few years later.
There's four players from this team. If you include, from the starting lineup of a second leg, which is the same as starting lineup of a first second leg, mm-hmm. there's four of them play in the final in 91 when Zvezda win it. So there's Stojanovic, the goalkeeper, the two fullbacks, Shabanadzevic and Majdowski, and Savicevic. Stojkovic obviously is gone by then. Then you have Poznetski, a young Poznetski, who's just won the under-20 World Cup with Yugoslavia in Chile the previous year, and he comes off the bench, so I don't know, what, 20 minutes to go or something in the second leg. So it's there's a really a lot of rebuilding goes on between this defeat and the Zvezda that win the European Cup in 91.
Mm. We've mentioned a lot about the second leg. We're going to have to get through some of the games, because some people may not have a clue what we're going on about here. So the first leg in Milan ends 1-1. They go to Yugoslavia and they play what should have been the second leg, but now we're referring to it as the first second leg, and they get themselves into a bit of trouble, James.
Yeah, they go behind, mm-hmm. And again it's Dragan Stojkovic, mm-hmm. Setting up this time Savicevic. But you should go on YouTube to see if you can see this goal, because it's amazing. There's some Yugoslav commentary, of maybe 20, 30 minute highlight thing, and it gets towards the end and you see this goal, which I think is just into the second half.
Yeah, five minutes after half time.
And you don't know what the commentator's commentating on from the kind of the stadium kind of lateral stand camera pan. Because all it is just this kind of yellow fog.
Well, Belgrade, if people who haven't been there, sits at where the Sava River meets the Danube. And so it's in a valley, or in sort of these two valleys come together. And there's a tendency for fog to sit there. And the fog that night was really, really thick.
Yeah, in some respects, it's remarkable that the game went on as long as it did. Mm. And you hear the commentator... and he's just muddling through it. To be honest, my Serbo-Croat is not good enough to know what he's saying. But you hear the crowd sort of go, yes, yes, and then roar like this. And he's like, well, what's happened? he has no idea. And then they cut to another angle.
There's a camera behind the goal.
Exactly, yeah.
Where you can see Galli quite clearly. And then you can see just grey. Yeah. And sort of this, you see this sort of red and white shirt. And Savicevic, I'm guessing, is around, but he's just outside the box, I think. Mm. But if it turned out he's 15 yards out, that might also be true.
Yeah.
And that suddenly there's a ball just exploding into the net, and you've got no idea where it's come from. And yeah, the idea that they thought that was in any way playable. Mm. I mean, my understanding was that the guideline was, if a referee stood on the centre spot, he had to be able to see the crossbars at both ends.
Well, this is impossible.
I'm not sure you can see the crossbar from the penalty spot, never mind the centre spot.
Yeah, and because if you look at that angle behind the goal again, you see kind of what Galli, how he is assessing the situation, because he's at what would be the far post to where the goal ends up going in. And you're kind of, what's he looking at here? What's he following? And then he's kind of tentatively sort of stepping across his goal. And by that time, the ball's into the top corner on the other side. And just incredible. Then 7 minutes later, the ref from Germany, Dieter Pauli, decides enough is enough.
But he's already done one of the very, or two of the very significant things.
And this is great. So the the Milan coaching staff, they kind of become aware that a goal has gone in, but they
news gets to them.
they then go down down the tunnel, the long tunnel at the Maracanã, and get into the dressing room, and they see Pietro Paolo Virdis already in a suit and tie, and they're like, "Hang on a minute, how have you got changed so quickly?" He's like, "I was sent off 15 minutes ago." And they didn't know. So they were a goal down and down to 10 men, and they had no idea.
And he'd been sent off for punching Goran Djuric.
Yeah.
Well, did he think he'd get away with it in the fog?
So, I mean, this is, yeah, as it transpires, Milan are in a big hole.
Yeah.
You know, their first leg, drawn 1-1, conceded an away goal. Now they're a goal down and a man down. And yeah, thankfully there is the gods intervene.
Mm.
The fog descends, and it's decided that they should play the game again for the following day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Hopefully with a bit more daylight. Hopefully the fog has cleared. But
did this needed? But did the referee not ask the?
He couldn't find him.
He disappeared. He was away. but was it not put to both managers? So obviously Milan were very keen to play the next game, and some of the Red Star players were surprised that the manager or whoever it was asked agreed to do this, because they thought we had them by the throat there.
On the footage that I've seen, you see the Red Star players gather around the referee.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard to dispute the decision, because the fog is so bad,
right,
that the idea of playing another half an hour,
mm-hmm,
it just looks nigh on impossible. It's not like fog that
I've ever really
seen.
Well, I was trying to think what the thickest fog I'd ever seen a game played in, and it was, I think it was that, do you remember that Bosnia the Island playoff?
Yeah.
And that was, on the TV, the TV cut through the fog much better than actually being there. And an Ireland goal was scored, and you knew the goal had been scored, but I had absolutely no idea who the player was who got it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a vague green shape, and then the crowd reaction told you the ball had gone in, but no real notion. But this was way thicker than that.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is blanket.
Yeah.
Like, in its how opaque it is. Mm-hmm. It's.
But with this replay game, the sending off counts.
Yeah.
So Virdis is suspended.
And also,
Ancelotti picked up a yellow card when he was suspended.
Yeah. Oh, right.
So
I wonder what, yeah.
Zvezda to go in with the same 11. Milan forced to make two changes.
And the other great thing about this is that for the first second leg and the second leg, Ruud Gullit,
yes,
is a doubt,
yeah,
a big doubt. And you look at the lengths that Milan go to in order to try and get him fit for this tie. Basically, both Marco van Basten and Ruud Gullit, they didn't really trust Milan's medical staff. They had their own guys, their own physios who they were used to in Holland with the national team. And aware of that, Sacchi basically calls the Dutch physio and says, "Fancy coming to Belgrade? We can arrange a flight for you." And so this tiny little private jet takes off in Basel, I think, goes to Amsterdam, picks up physio Troost. It then goes to Rome to pick up Adriano Galliani, the chief executive of Milan, and then flies to Belgrade, and they work on Gullit sort of pretty much for as long as they can, and he's on the fifth floor of this Belgrade hotel doing sprints up and down the corridor to kind of work on this kind of thigh injury that he's got. Wakes up in the morning, he's still feeling pain, and Troost basically says, "Look, probably only going to have him for 45 minutes tops. Anything longer than that is a risk." Now, as Jonathan says, they lose Virdis, who's a striker anyway, so they have to play Graziano Manardi, who is a teenager, up front with Marco van Basten. And
had he played much?
No. I mean, this is
what
again,
a baptism of fire.
This is one of the things that Sacchi kind of uses to embellish his own kind of legend, which is, "Have you seen the Milan squad that I had?
you know, you all focus on Baresi, Maldini, and the three
Costa
Dutchmen.
Costa Curta, Zotti. Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty good squad.
Yeah, we're focusing on the ridiculous world-class yeah. players.
You all focus on those guys. Well, you know, when I won the league, it was with eight guys I inherited. It's like, well, yeah, there are some of the best defenders of all time. And, you know, we signed Angelo Colombo. And you know where we got him from? Udinese. Not a big side. Carlo Ancelotti, his knees had blown out so much he couldn't move. And all this kind of thing. And then he says, and you look at my bench, we had three goalkeepers and these kids, Manari and Massimiliano Capellini, who would play a part in the second leg, come on, and we'll get to, looks like he's going to take a part in the shootout, but we'll get to that. But anyway, so they are decimated for this second leg. And again, the atmosphere, I think we should touch on the atmosphere that they experienced in Belgrade over the 2 days. And again, Sacchi kind of plays to the gallery here. He's like, you know, in my hotel the night before, you know, it's really important to get our rest in, sleep, go to bed early. Can't, there's all this banging going on. You know, we think it's Red Star Ultras and all this sort of thing, but no, it's gunfire, it's machine gun fire. And this is before the conflict had even started in Yugoslavia. So I think this
in
is...
In 88?
His...
Like, I went on holiday to Yugoslavia in both 89 and 90. So,
I was going to say, it was a very big...
I mean, admittedly, in 90, we did on the way back, we did go through an army training thing. They had to like black out the windows as we drove through.
So, Jonathan, this is where Sacchi's memory is as foggy as the second first leg. And then watching the game back... last night, what strikes you is you just hear German shepherds barking all the time during the game, and there are these German shepherds kind of being held tightly on a leash, but behind the advertising hoarding.
Well, the other thing that the American are, the Belgrade American are, is they have the advertising hoardings, and then they have like hedges.
Yeah,
like they're working the fans back as these big box hedges. It's an odd thing. It's like, you know, if you want to invade the pitch, it's like doing the Grand National to get there.
Yeah.
It's like,
are they particularly prickly, those bushes? You know, is that
well? They're big, thick.
Yeah.
Things. I mean, like
I know, but well, some fans can be quite determined.
Yeah. So I mean, this is bizarrely the kind of weird dynamic of this tie is that on the one hand, Milan get lucky. In that a game that is going against them gets abandoned and they get to go again the following day.
Especially when they were down to 10 men.
But in the state that they're in, with the suspensions and the fitness doubts, and also start the second leg, they have a perfectly legitimate goal disallowed, where I think it's Vasilievich ends up putting it into his own net. It looks like it's well over the line. And the referee kind of is looking at it and thinks, nah, not having it. And again, they sort of wave play on. And this is one of a number of things that I think mentally, over the course of the 120 minutes, Milan have to get over, which I think makes...
I mean, there's a much bigger thing coming up.
Yes,
but...
yeah.
It's funny you say that because I thought to myself, after the game was called off because of the fog... I did wonder if they thought, right, we've got a second bite of the cherry here, and that would lift them. And there's perhaps an argument, but as you say...
Well, and the other thing you'd say about that is the atmosphere at 1 o'clock the next day was, I mean, it was
still quite
passionate
raucous.
Enough, but yeah. It was nowhere near as hostile as it had been. It was 88,000 there on the first second leg. Still pretty full the next day, but wasn't as full. Mm. You know, a daytime game never has quite the same hostility as a night game.
It is quite funny. I mean, we'll get to extra time, but just to sort of flash forward there, as they're about to kick off the first half of added time, Adriano Galliani comes in to the dressing room and he says, there are 140,000 out there, you know. They've opened the gates. And like all of a sudden, all these fans who finished work are coming in. I just, you know, don't be afraid. And saying that is kind of like if you're on a cliff edge and saying, don't look down.
Yeah.
And
the cavalry have arrived, but I'm sure they're not that hard.
And Hullet apparently goes up to Galliani and he says, well, how many fans do Red Star usually get
for games. And Galliani's kind of scratching his bald head. And he's like, 40,000? And Hullett says, well, it looks like the other 100,000 have come to see us.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
Pomisli od se eventualno konsultuje sa delegatom Evropske futbolske unije, Otom Demutom iz Austrije. A to znači da on dole na terenu dobro vidi isto kao igrači.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Što se tiče sastava Milana, potpuno isti onaj tim koji je Arrigo Sacchi, trener šampiona Italije, najavio juče na konferenciji za štampu. Dakle, nema najboljeg igrača Evrope, Ruda Gullita.
So, you know, with Sacchi, there's all the sort of pomp and facade, you know, how much was, what was the psychological effect of that? So they get away with it, the match is abandoned with the fog. He must have been thinking, right, hang on. Yes, they were down. I understand that they had a couple of suspensions and all that, but he must have been thinking to himself, right, we've got a chance here. And it's that little flicker that you've got to kind of work with and go into.
Well, I think, I mean, if you look at how well they played in that first half, they do dominate. They don't. It's not a kind of high press that, again, he would sort of say, you know, this is how we played all the time. They kind of... It's a bit of a half press, really, but they play most of that game, that first half in Red Star's half, and it's only Savicevic who's able to get them out, sort of connecting with Stojkovic, and he would say again, kind of the provocative nature of this Red Star team was that when they kicked off that second leg, Red Star I think won the toss but gave the ball to Milan as if to say, we played you last night. And you weren't up to much then. You were ineffective. You didn't get past us. Try. go on, let's see it. Because at that point, they could play for a 0-0 and they would go through. And Milan, in that first half, I think, get enough kind of encouragement to think that it's the game is going to go their way. But I think you see, after even before Van Basten scores, there are a couple of chances where right guard's sort of testing Stojanovic from distance. Stojanovic always spills the ball. Manari probably could do better on a couple of occasions there. They arguably should be 2-0 up. But I think one of the things that really changes the mentality for the team and could have gone either way is what happens to Donadoni.
Well, let's deal with the goals first.
Mm.
So 34 minutes, Milan take the lead. It's a free kick just to the left of the box, taken short. It's Donadoni, isn't it?
It is Donadoni,
yeah. He sort of works a bit of space for the cross. Crosses the back post, Van Basten
heads
it in. It's a lovely goal. Milan one up. 3 minutes, sorry, 5 minutes later, that link up you're talking about between Savicevic and Stojkovic. Savicevic chip over the top, Stojkovic runs on. Bang, absolutely
amazing.
Hammers.
There it is again.
Amazing goal. Also for just how Savicevic, I mean, it's a Milan attack which is broken down. I think Minari loses the ball. He then gives away a free kick and Juric, I think it is, decides to take a quick free kick and he just goes long to Savicevic, who I think he's got Costacurta lingering around him, and Costacurta doesn't know what to do. Because Savicevic comes short to get the ball. So Costacurta comes out. He's like, I'm miles away. I'm miles away from uncomfortable with here. And he starts to back off, which gives Savicevic the time to chest it down. He plays one keepy uppy. And then in the same movement, just turns and lifts it over to Stojkovic. And Tassotti's like, oh my God, I can't catch him. And the only way Galli is going to save this shot is if he swallows it, because it's right down his throat. It's a fantastic goal. And maybe one that's been lost. I don't know, maybe people that haven't seen it. But if you want to kind of know how good these two players are in particular, I mean, it's illustrative of that.
Well, you know, I know this this wasn't the... You know, this was the very slightest foundations of the side that went on to win the European Cup in 91. But I always think of that great Graham Souness, Walter Smith story. That
which one was that?
So Rangers played Zvezda in the quarterfinal in 1991. Mm-hmm. And Souness is obviously the Rangers manager. And he sends Walter Smith, who was his assistant,
that's right, oh, yeah,
to go and watch them. And comes back with a... two-word report.
That's right.
We're fucked.
That's what I remember. Yes. Yeah, and he was right.
Yep.
Very accurate reporting. So, yes, back to the game. So, it's 1-1 and all to play for. But this time, Milan, the onus is a bit more on Red Star, because Milan have now equaled it up on away goals.
Yeah.
So... both sides need to. So Milan really just need a draw.
Yeah, Red Star.
Obviously a 2-2 draw. Or
start to open up and are a little bit bolder than they had been. But you have this incident where Donadoni goes up for a ball and Vasilievich essentially manages to headbutt and elbow him in the same move. This is a really traumatic event, because I think it quite quickly becomes clear to not only the Milan players but the Red Star players as well that Donadoni is very badly injured, and it turns out that he has broken his jaw.
No, I don't think he has.
Well, isn't it the lower part of his jaw?
It's a serious injury nonetheless.
Well, yeah, carry on. Go on, sorry.
Well, okay, so I mean, from Milan's kind of story on this is that his jaw is broken. They can't open his mouth. He risks to swallow his tongue. They have to force open his jaw and mouth, and then get his tongue out.
So the story I'd heard was that he was in danger swallowing his tongue, which apparently is physiologically impossible. Whatever people mean when they say that there's a danger of the airway being blocked.
Yeah,
and it's Zvezda physio then breaks his jaw in order to clear the airway.
Okay.
And so Zvezda physio has kind of realised quick enough how serious this is, and then quick punch, break the jaw, release the pressure.
Wow. I mean,
what a man.
That would also correspond with the general Zvezda strategy throughout this game, which was very hard knocks.
Runs throughout the club, that guy.
But you see the effect that this has on the Milan players, because Maldini would later come and say, he's like, Donadoni is blue in the face. They think he's gone. They think he's dead. And you see players on their haunches, then falling to the ground, head in hands. And as he stretched off, anyway, Hulik runs on. Hulik runs on in his cycling shorts to protect those thighs and the muscle that's been an issue for him. And the only guy who kind of high-fives him is Baresi. So you got these two kind of... Baresi's cool as you like. You see it throughout the game. But everyone else is like, oh, God. And Hullet's like, all right, lads, it's on, isn't it? And and the thing is, I think I tried to pick this up on the video, but they say that they hear the Zvezda fans boo and whistle as the stretcher goes off. And that kind of galvanizes this Milan team that, you know, we're not leaving here without qualification. We're going to do this. News does filter through throughout the game about Donadoni's health, that he's doing better. But, I mean, if you look back at the footage of that incident, it must be after, however they're opening his mouth to stop him swallowing his tongue, whether it's with this Red Star
right-hander.
Yeah, right-hander.
That certainly is a story that's very much believed in Belgrade. Those are reliable people telling me that.
Yeah, so. You see the pain that Donadoni must be going through because his legs are just flipping, thumping, going up and down.
Twitching away.
And it's not a pleasant sight. So again, Milan, after losing Virdis, Ancelotti, they lose the guy who has just assisted their goal, and Hullet, who's half fit, is coming on for them. And they've also just conceded as well. So, I mean, it doesn't look good for them, I would say. But they still manage to find a way.
They managed to get to penalties.
Mm.
And that's of course, how they won the game. Was it 4-2 on penalties? But you're right. What I find fascinating is, you would think the way the story goes that they were down and out in that the first second leg, as we've dubbed it, and you think, they'll come roaring back. It wasn't the case.
Mm.
They needed to fight tooth and nail, which showed the character. Yeah, they rode their luck. Of course they did. They got lucky, you know. But actually, the character of that side, for all those things, to get to penalties, and then the quality of their penalties.
Yeah,
Baresi with the first, and that you see. The great sadness of one of the sad things about the 1994 World Cup final is, I remember Baresi blazing his penalty over the bar. But actually, this is the penalty you want to remember him by, because Baresi smashes it into the roof of the net to get Milan going in the penalty shootout. And then really, they didn't look back.
Also, and Jonathan, you were saying off air about Red Star and penalties and shootouts. Was it already the case in the...
Yeah, I don't know actually if it was the case this season, but certainly by the time they won it in 1991, drawn games in Yugoslav League were settled by penalty shootouts. So something like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but something like, you got 4 points if you won the game in 90 minutes, 2 points if you won it on a shootout, 1 point if it was a draw, but you lost on the shootout. So one of the reasons Zvezda was so happy to play for penalties in that 91 final was they were looking at the Marseille team. They were seeing Chris Waddle, who just missed a penalty in the World Cup, Dragan Stojkovic, who just missed a penalty in the World Cup, although as it turned out, he refused to take a penalty. He says, because they didn't start him in the game, so if you don't trust me from the start, you can't trust me from the spot. Or, I'm crapping it because I just missed one in the World Cup quarterfinal. you had Amoros, who'd been in the France side when they'd lost on penalties to West Germany. Stojanovic, the goalkeeper, was sort of renowned for his penalty-saving ability. Plus, they had players who were used to, like, not every week, but on a regular basis, to taking penalties in a high-pressure situation. So they were pretty confident if it got to a shootout, they were going to win. I suspect that came in after this season. I don't think they did it for a long time. So yeah. I think that was still in the future. But as it turned out, Savicevic missed. Yeah. I mean, a terrible penalty for the player. Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose...
Well, he tried to put it down the middle.
Skillful players have missed penalties
But it's a soft, straight penalty.
It was, yeah.
And then Mikkola, the substitute, also misses. And yeah, 4-2 with Baresi, Van Basten, Navani and Rijkaard. Rijkaard scoring the decisive. Mm-hmm.
And this was a real moment of vindication for Sacchi because the big discussion in the off-season was about who Berlusconi wanted them to sign. And Berlusconi very much had been taken by this Argentine, Claudio Borghi, who would later go on to manage Chile. And Sacchi, as we've mentioned about his opinion of tens, like Savicevic and that sort of, was having none of this. I do not want
and
this Borghi guy.
And Borghi was a very Argentinian ten, a proper, an old school death.
Yeah. And so Sacchi, who, a little bit like Pep until recently, he'd always sign kind of one-year rolling contracts because he had so much stress. You know, it's just such a stressful business. I mean, I'm not going to make light of that because it was a genuine... This is something that kept him up at night, drained him, burnt him out. It's one of the reasons why his star burned so brightly in the game, but kind of so briefly. So he would always kind of threaten to leave. I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll just pack it in and you can just get that guy who's working for the bank for you. Fabio, what's his name? Capello, Jesus. And
I mean, this Sacchi story, I mean, we haven't got time to go into detail, but it is an extraordinary story that no football background whatsoever.
No.
Working as a shoe salesman in his father's factory.
Yeah.
And then jacks in to become a coach, gets his break with Parma, who were what, a Serie C team, and they beat Milan in the Coppa Italia.
Yeah.
And that persuades Berlusconi to give him a job. So he's gone in 7 years from being a shoe salesman to being the manager of AC Milan.
And also being able to tell the most powerful man in Italy, Silvio Berlusconi, to say, like, you want this Claudio Borghi guy, you can sign him, but you're going to have to send him out on loan to somewhere like Como because I want Frank Rijkaard.
And the fascinating thing about that is Rijkaard was a centre-back at the time. I still think probably Rijkaard's best position was as a centre-back.
Yeah.
And he's got Baresi and Costa Curta.
Yeah.
But he obviously saw Rijkaard having a role at the back of midfield, which he, you know, he did do brilliantly because I guess maybe the Dutch model of centre-back adapts very easily to playing as a holding midfielder.
And again, the kind of legend of this game is that not only... does Sacchi kind of turn to Berlusconi and say, told you so. Yeah. But when they come to draw up a list of who's going to take the penalties, Sacchi's like, I'm going to put Capellini there, 17-year-old.
So Capellini come off the bench with 5 minutes of extra time remaining to replace Manari.
Yeah. And Rijkaard comes up to Sacchi and he says, you seen the lad? His legs are trembling. He's never gonna score this pen. I'll take it.
Really?
And that's why he takes the final penalty. He buries it.
Right.
And Sacchi always, he says, because you can hear it clang in off the post.
Yeah.
And Sacchi was like, yeah,
that's my man.
That's my boy.
Yeah.
Frankie.
Well, an extraordinary turn of events, and as you say, what a pivotal moment in the career of
Sacchi. Because
and also in the history of Milan.
I think if we Jonathan mentioned it there about Sacchi's story and all the kind of the clash of cultures, how he was an iconoclast in Italian football and that he wanted to play proactive attacking football. He didn't believe in everything that he'd been told about what Italian football identity was about, which was, you know, we're a country that's been invaded over and over the centuries, and we just kind of, you know, sort of defend and resist and that sort of thing, and then we might be able to have a little bit of a counter and get something out of this. And he's like, no, I don't want any of that.
Well, there's this idea, wasn't it, that, I mean, which I guess Gianni Brera, the great
ideologue of
the sort of the Italian Glanville, or maybe Glanville's Italian Glanville. But, you know, the sort of dominant football journalist of the 60s and 70s, he had this idea that Italians were physically weak, and that's why they had to play this reactive counter-attacking football. And Sacchi, who'd been the shoe salesman going around Europe, going, no, we're exactly the same size as everybody else. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I've got the shoe measurements.
Yeah. and of course, yeah, they win that game, and as you say, they hammer Real Madrid.
But it's interesting, Marcus, why I say this is pivotal is because that second round game, and particularly the circumstances of those two legs in Belgrade, it takes a hell of a toll from Milan. Mm-hmm. In part because, you see that what their results are immediately afterwards. They lose four of the next seven games. Mm-hmm. And they go from being in the title race with Giovanni Trapattoni's Inter to being nowhere near it. Yeah, they go from being 1 point behind to 10 points behind. Mm-hmm. Come the turn of the year, there is Aldo Biscardi, this TV presenter who had Il Processo di Biscardi, the trial, Biscardi's trial, where he'd essentially be the judge and hold court every Sunday or Monday about everything that had gone on at the weekend in Italian football. And it's on Berlusconi's channel. And so there was always this kind of, if Berlusconi wanted to get a message across, he'd call Biscardi. And he's like, all right, well, I've been told that, you know, after this defeat to Cesena, Sacchi's gone. And ultimately, Berlusconi always stood by him. Now, whether he would have stood by him had they already gone out of the European Cup and then suffered those defeats and they were falling away, I don't know. Because there were a lot of very, particularly in the beginning, but also in that second season, critical moments in Sacchi essentially being given the faith and being allowed to implement his ideas and see them flourish. Because shortly after he gets the job, they lose to Espanyol in the UEFA Cup, and they go out, and already everyone's saying...
This is in 87-8.
87-8, and they're all saying, this damn shoe salesman, you know, he doesn't know anything about football. You know, he's come from Parma, I don't know him. And you've got people like Brera, who's like, he's trying to implement a kind of football, which will never work here. You know, it's like taking a Brazilian to a churrascaria or something where they serve steak and asking them to serve vegan food. It's just not going to happen. and ultimately, Berlusconi stands by him. But I do think, had they gone out of the European Cup at that stage, which was the be-all and end-all for Berlusconi, he understood earlier than anyone that if you want to leave a mark in football history, if you want to make a name for yourself quickly, as he wanted to do, both as an individual, for his own political purposes, but also as a president, you had to win the European Cup. Mm. And whether they do or not, because ultimately they finished third in the league in 88-89, they only qualified for the following year as champions of Europe. So they don't get the other opportunity. Sacchi flames out, maybe. Yeah, I think it's a pivotal moment in football history, that game.
Yeah, definitely. But a great shame for Red Star, though.
Yeah, and we should say Donadoni was back for the final.
Yes.
Yeah.
So all's well that ends well.
Indeed. But yeah, as we say, great start, great shame for Red Star, but they did win the European Cup a few years later. But yes, weather hindering the team from the Balkans. Of course, weather didn't always hinder sportsmen from the Balkans. Goran Ivanisevic was lucky against Tim Henry in that semi-final at Wimbledon. Of course, rain helped him there.
Is he a Hajduk Split fan?
He invested in Hajduk for a while.
Yeah.
Did he?
James,
a real pleasure talking to you about that. Thank you, everybody. That was the Blizzard's Greatest Games podcast, recorded in Outset Studios in South Wimbledon. An amazing tie, and as you say, James, very pivotal indeed in the history of Milan and Sacchi. Thank you, James. Pleasure. Jonathan, always a pleasure, and we shall see you next time, everybody. That was Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. Next week, we're back with another classic game of football from history, so don't you dare miss it.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.